Welcome to Capital Link's company presentation series.
Hello, I'm Paul Ampudis at Capital Link. Welcome to the 2026 Capital Link company presentation series. In this series, company management highlights the company's current operations, business development, growth prospects, and sector outlook. We have with us today senior management team of MPC Container Ships. We welcome Mr. Constantin Baack, co-CEO. MPC Container Ships is a leading container tonnage provider focusing on small to mid-size container ships. Its main activity is to own and operate a portfolio of container ships servicing intra-regional trade lanes on fixed-rate charters. The company is listed in Oslo under the ticker symbol MPCC. In terms of logistics, we begin with a company presentation followed by a live Q&A. Please note that participants can submit their questions through the Q&A button on your screen during the webinar. Your questions will be answered during the Q&A session. Before we begin our webinar, kindly note that this discussion is strictly for informational and educational purposes and should not be relied upon. The webinar does not constitute an offer to buy or sell securities or investment advice or advice of any kind, and Capital Link bears no responsibility for the content. Let us now begin with our discussion. I'd like now to pass the floor to Mr. Constantin Baack. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Paul, and thanks to the Capital Link team for hosting this series. And hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Constantin Baack, and I'm CEO of MPC Container Ships. And it's great to have all of you joining here today as part of the Capital Link company presentation series. Over the next 20 minutes, I will give you an overview on our company, the market environment we operate in, and how we position MPC Container Ships going forward. Before we begin, please note that this presentation may include certain forward-looking statements. The business that we operate in involves certain risks and uncertainties, so that actual results potentially may differ materially. Today's agenda is pretty straightforward, as you can see here. I will start with a company overview, then move to the market section and conclude with a strategy and outlook, followed by a Q&A, as just mentioned by Paul. Let me start with a company overview, focusing on who we are, how we got there, and what differentiates MPC Container Ships in our sector. To begin, let me outline who we are as a company, and you can see that on this slide. MPC Container Ships is a market-leading tonnage provider in the intra-regional container shipping segment, built around a clear and deliberate strategy. That strategy rests on a number of key pillars. Firstly, a modern and well-positioned fleet, continuously optimized through fleet renewal and targeted retrofits. Secondly, a solid charter backlog of approximately $2 billion, providing strong earnings visibility across cycles. Thirdly, and very importantly, a disciplined approach to capital allocation. We operate with balance sheet flexibility and a conservative financial profile, allowing us to balance both ongoing investments with consistent value generation and meaningful capital returns to our shareholders. Equally important is our proven execution capabilities across cycles. We have demonstrated the ability to grow, optimize, and adapt our portfolio in both strong as well as weak markets. All of this is underpinned by a solid balance sheet, providing resilience and flexibility when opportunities arise. Now, looking at our path from foundation to long-term value creation on the next slide, MPC Container Ships was founded in 2017, as I said, with a clear focus on intra-regional container shipping. In the early years, growth was driven by secondhand acquisitions in a low-price market environment, allowing us to build scale at attractive entry points. During the upswing from 2019 to 2022, we positioned the fleet to benefit from improving fundamentals and also rising asset values, while at the same time, we placed a focus on also returning substantial capital to shareholders and continuing to invest in the company. From 2023 onwards, the company placed a strong emphasis on transformation, operational excellence, and long-term value creation, supported by portfolio optimization, fleet renewal, and selective newbuilding investments. Today, we operate a highly modern fleet and maintain strong, well-established relationships with our key customers, the liner operators in our core segment. Looking at the intra-regional market and our positioning there in a bit more detail, we are the largest tonnage provider to liner companies in the small to mid-size container segment below 6,000 TEU. Including our new building program, we own and operate 68 vessels with roughly 190,000 TEU capacity. The average age of our fleet is around 10, 11 years, and our fleet operates worldwide, as you can see here on the left-hand side on the slide, which enables us close long-term partnerships with key liner operators. We see ourselves as a reliable tonnage provider, delivering efficient and fit-for-purpose vessels in complex regional trades. Again, our focus on intra-regional shipping has been deliberate, and it's also a differentiator compared to others in the industry, based on what we deem a favorable long-term supply and demand dynamics, and of course, also our customers' needs. Smaller vessels dominate these trades, yet the fleet is aging, and the order book remains skewed towards larger ships. Taken together, this positions MPC Container Ships as a well-scaled, modern, and reliable tonnage provider in the structurally supported segment of small to mid-size container ships with strong customer relationships and an attractive long-term value creation potential. With that positioning in mind, let me briefly turn to some of the financial and operational KPIs on this slide. Let me start with the key messages on this slide. We deliver reliable operations, consistent earnings visibility based on a strong balance sheet. On the left-hand side, you can see the development of operating revenues and adjusted EBITDA since 2021. Results in 2022 and 2023 benefited from historically strong container markets. Very importantly, our portfolio and chartering strategy, supported by a solid backlog, has positioned us to continue generating robust earnings going forward. A significant share of our earnings, as we will see later on, is secured through long-term contracts rather than spot exposure. On the top right, the chart shows the development of time charter equivalent, TCE, per day and vessel and utilization, underlying stable and consistent operational performance as a fundament of our operations. These metrics translate into predictability, but also resilience, both from an operational and financial perspective. This is further reinforced by a strong and flexible balance sheet at the bottom right. And you can see as of the third quarter of 2025, leverage stood at around 35%, which we consider conservative for the sector. And 28 out of our vessels are debt-free, providing additional financial resilience and optionality. Furthermore, since 2022, we have returned more than $1 billion in dividends to shareholders while continuing to invest in fleet renewal. Against this backdrop, in terms of reliable operations and strong, flexible balance sheet supported by earnings visibility, let me now run through the market environment and the conditions shaping the container shipping industry today. Let me start the market section with a more broad environment assessment. Uncertainty remains elevated, that's for sure, driven by geopolitical, macroeconomic, and also regulatory factors. As illustrated on this slide, geopolitical developments continue to add a big volatility element. Trade tensions, protectionist policies, and also regional conflicts, they're all disrupting supply chains and increasing operational complexity and challenges. Strategic bottlenecks, such as the Red Sea, remain vulnerable to political and also security developments. The slide also reflects ongoing regulatory uncertainty. The pace and structure of what we call decarbonization regulation in general remain in flux, adding complexity to compliance as well as investment decisions. That said, elevated uncertainty does not automatically translate into weak fundamentals, particularly when it comes to intra-regional trades, our focus area. Against this backdrop, let me now turn to trade volumes as well as freight rates that you can see illustrated here on this slide. On the left-hand side, you can see that container trade ended 2025 on a positive note, with freight rates firming, especially towards the end. And growth has been supported by, for example, strong Asian exports and continued momentum, in particular in intra-regional cargo flows. Looking ahead, the right-hand side indicates that trade growth is expected to moderate to around 2.5% in 2026. And this is obviously reflects an element of tariff headwinds in a more cautious macro backdrop. Importantly, this is a slowdown rather than a correction or contraction, with growth expected to recover in 2027. Turning from volumes to capacity, supply-side dynamics in the charter market remain supportive. As shown on this slide, from left to right, forward vessel availability has declined further, particularly in the small to mid-size segments. This reflects limited new capacity coming to the market and continued demand from liner companies securing tonnage well in advance, as we are now in a more forward charter fixing market for a quite prolonged time already. Charter rates have eased slightly from last year's highs, but both rates and charter periods remain strong by historical standards. Asset prices also remain elevated, and second-hand values are supported by limited availability, while new building prices, as you can see on the right-hand side, are broadly stable, reflecting higher costs and shipyard capacity constraints. On the next slide, we can see that these shorter-term dynamics sit within what we would call a supportive structural framework as far as, you know, the supply and demand side, in particular for intra-regional trade, are concerned. On the left-hand side, you can see the relationship between order book to fleet, which is on the Y-axis, and the fleet age by vessel size, whereas on the X-axis, you see the percentage of 20-year-old vessels or older illustrated. The order book hence remains heavily concentrated in the larger vessels, which is obvious from this illustration, while smaller sizes continue to age and replacement capacity remains limited. On the right-hand side, illustrating the demand outlook and development, the slide highlights that demand growth is structurally stronger in intra-regional trades, and this is driven by emerging markets, regionalization of supply chains, diversification of sourcing strategies, and not least, the development of new trade partnerships, which is worth highlighting at this point. The result is a clear imbalance between aging supply and resilient demand in small and mid-size container segment, which is our sweet spot. Bringing all of this together, let me summarize the key takeaways from the market section. Uncertainty and volatility remain elevated, and are likely to persist. However, intra-regional trades continue to show relative resilience and are expected to outperform main lane trades in the foreseeable future. At the same time, fleet structure and the order book remain supportive for smaller vessels and for well-positioned owners like ourselves with modern fleets, strong customer relationships, and solid balance sheets. The current environment remains constructive despite ongoing uncertainty. Having covered the markets, let me now turn to how we at MPC Container Ships respond to this market environment. Our strategy is not about predicting short-term market movements, but about positioning the company to perform across cycles through disciplined capital allocation and strong execution. Our approach, as depicted here on this slide, is a proactive approach. It is grounded in clear strategic positioning with a focus on intra-regional container shipping, where we see attractive long-term risk-adjusted return. Our fleet and chartering strategy is execution-focused. We have a proven track record of acquiring vessels at attractive entry points, and that means both buying at the low of the market or buying on a risk-adjusted basis with strong charters attached in higher market environments, securing employment, optimizing performance, and divesting assets in a disciplined manner across cycles. This is underpinned by strong financing and investment capacity and conservative financing, forward chartering, as well as moderate leverage, provide balance sheet flexibility, which allows us to invest through the cycle while generating value and returning capital to shareholders. As reflected in the graphic on the right-hand side, this approach aligns not only our interests, but also the interests of our customers, our shareholders, as well as our financing partners. Overall, our strategy combines disciplined execution, opportunistic capital deployment, and financial resilience to create long-term value across cycles. Looking ahead, and this slide basically illustrates how we have translated strategy into disciplined capital allocation through what we call a continuous fleet renewal process. On the investment side, we focus on acquiring young, fuel-efficient tonnage through accretive transactions currently supported by charter coverage, appropriate for this point in the cycle. Targeted retrofit investments further enhance asset values, efficiency, and competitiveness. At the same time, we also remain equally disciplined on divestments. And you can see on the top left here how our fleet has developed from 61 ships in 2021 to 68 ships in 2025. Having said that, and that's not illustrated on the slide, we have been very active in replacing tonnage. And we have since 2021 actually divested 46 ships with an average age of 17 years. And we've acquired 46 ships, more modern ships and new buildings with an average age of 5 years, which meant we have reduce the average age of our fleet, average year built from 2007 and 2021 to on average 2015 and 2025 or 2026 now. And this demonstrates that fleet renewal at MPCC is not about value creation, not growth. It's only about value creation. It's not growing at growth stake. It's actually about making the right thing at the right point of time. Today, around 75% of our fleet consists of eco-design vessels, new buildings, or substantially retrofitted ships. Hence, fleet renewal remains a deliberate long-term process supported by our approximately $1.5 billion investment program that we have rolled out to date. Now, let me look forward in terms of our charter coverage going forward on this slide. It's a standard slide that we have also presented as part of our Q3 earnings call. Here we have also added on a pro forma basis the most recent announcement, which is a series of additional new buildings that we have contracted very, very late last year. And hence our charter backlog amounts now to approximately $2 billion, corresponding to around $1.3 billion in projected EBITDA. Contract coverage is very strong with around 92% of days secured for 2026 and a meaningful coverage beyond that point. Very importantly, around 95% of the revenues are secured, and that's shown on the right-hand side, with either top-tier liner companies or cargo-back counterparties, supporting earnings quality and also cash flow visibility going forward. Let me now conclude with a few key points. We have significantly enhanced charter coverage and earnings visibility. We continue to execute a proactive fleet strategy, strengthening long-term competitiveness. Shareholder value creation remains central to our operation and the way we think and allocate capital. And that is supported by our disciplined approach when it comes to capital allocation and our strong balance sheet. We are well positioned to navigate an uncertain market outlook by focusing on what we can control: execution, fleet transition, operational excellence, and financial strength. Thank you very much for your attention. And I'm now happy to take your questions. All right. Let me see. There are a few questions that have come in through the web, and I will read them out and reply to them. To which degree do you see the impact of a Red Sea reopening on feeder rates? For example, if it's 100% for large containers, does that translate into 50% impact on feeders? I think this is, it's obviously a good question, and it's a very important question because the development in the Red Sea will play a decisive factor in how the market develops going forward, also in terms of charter rates. Having said that, you know, most of the ships actually transitioning the the Red Sea and or having transitioned the Red Sea in the past are the larger container ships. So there will obviously be a knock-on effect on feeder trades. I think the first thing that will happen is we will see congestions, a broad range of congestions, and that will certainly affect feeder rates. But going forward, there will obviously be potential also of a weaker market going forward should the Red Sea reopen. We have obviously seen announcements by some liners recently. We have seen some liners transiting, but most of these ships are either Danish flagged or for Maersk or US flagged for Maersk. So I think it's still not, throughout the bench, a transition of the Red Sea taking place at present. The pressure on charter rates might come. Having said that, and I alluded to that in the presentation, availability of tonnage is slim. And I can tell you that on our 2026 charter positions, which depending on whether you look at minimum or maximum periods, we look at 8 to 15 open positions. We are already having, a number of leads in extending ships even in Q3, Q4 this year, representing the fact that, there is shortage of tonnage and rate levels that are being discussed in periods are 2 years and let's say for an average ship between 2 and 3,000 TEU, mid to high $20,000 per day, which is still a very solid environment. There's another question. Are there more plans to continue the purchasing of new builds at currently elevated asset values? Well, I'm not sure what that question implies. I mentioned it throughout my presentation that, you have to invest smartly across cycles. And that means you can obviously buy cheap when the market is down, but buying at a, higher point in the cycle with a good counterparty, with a very solid de-risking, can also be an attractive value proposition. Having said that, we have done 60 new buildings last year. We are entertaining discussions on potentially a few more, but we will always follow the rationale of, doing new builds that are rational. And what does that mean? We have on the, last 16 new building deals that we've done, we have, CapEx of around 850 million and secured EBITDA plus scrap of almost the same figure. So we're fully de-risked with what we deem are very good counterparties, top operators, and those kind of deals we would continue to look at to possibly do a few more. And we might even be interested in also selling a few of the older ships because we believe fleet renewal is a very important transition in this phase. And to get the charter backlog against the new building is key for us at least because we want to do it in the right balance of risk and return. And hence, even though we look at, I would say, not low asset values, at least, you can get charters against it, basically fully de-risking your CapEx. So we would continue to look at these kind of transactions. Then there's another question. Is there any room for share buybacks given that the stock trades at a noticeable discount to NAV? Of course. We are in the capital allocation strategy frequently. Every quarter, we are discussing with the board, how we best or possibly adjust our capital allocation strategy when it comes to buybacks also versus investments. We have a clear path in terms of our distribution policy, which gives a range of 30% to 50% of net profit. That is obviously a given. In terms of share buybacks, we have over the past few years also mentioned that buying back shares, if you can buy a pool of older ships by buying back the shares, is a different strategic approach than renewing the fleet and buying into the future, investing into the future of the company. We have done the latter most recently over the last 12 months in particular, but to mix in some share buybacks is certainly something that is possible and that we are discussing and that we have done in the past, and I wouldn't rule it out going forward. And there's another question. What is your sustainable fully loaded cash break even per vessel, including operating costs, G&A, et cetera? I mean, we have that. And that basically depends also on the collateral pools that we have because we have ships without debt, we have ships with debt, we have ships with long-term charter, and we have usually reported that in our quarterly reportings. So there are different levels of break even that you should consider, and we have actually disclosed that in a quite nuanced fashion. in particular now on, let's say, the new buildings with higher leverage assumptions, given the strong revenue backlog, we would obviously look at higher cash break even per vessel versus the older vessels that basically carry zero debt or that are debt free. And therefore, the answer is a bit nuanced. Again, I would like to refer to our company website, where we have shown break evens for the different pools. There's another question, and that is regarding the concerns or potential concerns about counterparty risk to liners that can be hurt by other container segments over the next 5 years. Where we stand today, I'm pretty confident about the condition and the balance sheet strength of our counterparties. Of course, there can always be a market downturn, which will translate, and most likely most of the liner companies will have red figures for Q4. That's at least my expectation, or at least not significantly black figures. So there is obviously a market correction as far as the liner companies is concerned. Having said that, all our key customers are net cash with strong balance sheets, and we do not see any significant risk. The average charter duration of our fleet is around 4 years, so we are very positive about the way forward. We don't think that there's any significant risk attached to our counterparties at this stage. Then there's another question: can you discuss the pipeline of new buildings, especially with yards favoring larger ships? How does medium-sized ships be guaranteed with most of the yards being fully utilized? That is obviously a mix of our network and our very good relationship with key yards that we have. I mean, we have entertained new buildings with multiple yards over the last couple of years. We have a strong relationship to shipyards that are specifically focused and specialized in smaller to mid-size vessels, and currently we have seen now orders for larger container ships already for 2030 deliveries. So yes, the yards are full, yet we have been able to still get slots for smaller vessels in 28 most recently, and we are working on a number of projects that would still mean 2028 deliveries potentially. Then there's another question on the potential impact of recent trade escalations between the EU and US. So what would be the implications for us? Well, first of all, we are somewhat isolated when you look at 2026, and obviously referring to the previous question on counterparty risk. This is not a contractual or open day risk. This is a counterparty risk potentially, which I'm super comfortable with. And therefore, any escalation might lead to lower volumes, might lead to tariffs, which is not good. What we have seen over the last, 12, 24 months in particular, but in general, since trade war was first imposed in 2019, there has been, and I alluded to that in the presentation, there have been new trades being established, shifting of sourcing or diversification of certain trades, of sourcing strategies, and new trade partnerships being established, in particular in the Far East, but also Mexico into the US, for example. I mean, things find their way, cargo finds their way, and container shipping is still the most economic in terms of price, but also the most economic in terms of emissions, mode of transportation. And we have seen a continuous growth. It might shift from trade lane to trade lane, and I do not expect that to harm container trade completely going forward. Of course, there's a high degree of uncertainty related to certain actions that might be taken, but I think overall we're in a good spot as MPC Container Ships. Then there's another question regarding plans for installing energy savings devices to prolong asset life in face of fuel EU and EU ETS. Of course, I mean, we have a substantial retrofit program that has been executed. There are further retrofits, and retrofits means substantial retrofits, hydrodynamic retrofits, such as a new propeller, smaller propeller, a new bulbous bow, but also smaller energy savings devices, which we basically almost do on a daily basis. So we have a a full project team here and working closely with our ship managers in doing so. And this is being done often hand in glove with our chartering partners, but also partly on our own account. And there's another question. Are there any acquisition opportunities for you in light of the SIM divestment? I'm not exactly sure what this means, SIM divestment and acquisition. I mean, SIM is an asset-light business model, is a customer of ours. So I'm not completely sure. So if that can be somewhat a bit more concrete what that question refers to, that will be appreciated. But I'm not sure what this refers to. I'm just checking the list. I think there are okay, there are two further questions. Another question is, are you concerned about the growth rate of the feeder order book and the implications this has for rates in the long term? To be frank, I'm not. I do think that the feeder order book is still you know, basically underbuilt compared to if you look at the age profile and the need for replacement tonnage. And that is basically an obvious observation in my view when you look at the chartering activities that take place at this very moment, and also the, you know, in interest of liner operators to actually renew the fleet in the smaller sizes. We have seen, you know, good rates against new buildings. We are seeing a very strong charter market, and we are seeing an aging fleet. More than 900 ships out there in the smaller sizes are above 20 years of age. And this is by no means something that can be digested by or basically replaced by the existing order book. So I would actually expect that there will be more orders, and those orders are also needed, especially in the smaller sizes. Then there's a question around the usage of green methanol. Do we have a long-term view with what companies and what the future plans are concerning that? I think the use of green methanol eventually, you know, we have two vessels that can operate on green methanol that are equipped with dual fuel methanol main engines on the water already. We have one more to be delivered in the course of this year. I can tell you that currently the customers of our customers, meaning the shippers that ship boxes with our liner partners, are not yet willing to pay the extra premium for green methanol. And therefore the adoption rate is very slim. You know, the way we look at it is we provide optionality to our customers to eventually, you know, ensure that we can build green corridors. And for us, mathematically, it doesn't make a difference. I think we provide the optionality. We have structured transactions in that respect in a way that it is balanced for us. That the usage of green methanol is in my view, still a big question mark. Unless prices come down or people pay up, it will be very difficult to see an adoption of green methanol or other, let's say, new fuels. And as you see, you know, last year we have ordered 16 ships, and all of them are on conventional propulsion because we are also more confident and comfortable with a path to retrofit going forward. And also, this is what the market, the liner customers actually want, and that's what, you know, we feel comfortable with ordering. There's another question. How has the change of ownership in MPC Capital to Custom Maritime affected your strategic orientation so far? It has not affected the strategy. We continue the course. You know, you can look back what we have done the last 12 months. We have, you know, continued to deliver with a very clear and rational strategy in terms of capital allocation, renewing the fleet, building long-term value, and this is something that will continue going forward. All right, it seems that there are no further questions. I would wait for a few more seconds to see whether anything comes in, but in the meantime, I would like to thank all of you for your interest and for participating in a vivid Q&A discussion. We're excited about 2026. There are certainly challenges and uncertainties ahead, but we as MPCC are well positioned, and we look forward to 2026 and beyond. And wishing all of you all the best, and stay tuned. All the best. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you, Constantine. Great discussion and a good amount of questions there that came in. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join us today. Please note that this webinar will soon be made available for access upon demand on Capital Link's website at capitallinkwebinars.com and on Capital Link's YouTube channel. Thank you again, everyone. You may now disconnect.